Chapter 25. Billings. What do you mean? Yes, I pun, a Kalimborg. Fi donk, M lab. And then, after the wound of very stupid people, M. de Gelgenstein went on to explain to a yab his own pun. Well, but to proceed, cries he. He lived together at Birmingham, and I was going to be married to a rich heiress, egad. When what do you think this little cat does? She murders me, egad. And makes me manker the marriage. 20,000, I think it was. And I wanted the money in those days. Now, wasn't she an abominable monster, that mother of yours? Hey, Mr. A, what's your name? She served you right, said Mr. Billings, with a great oath, starting up out of all patience. Fellow, said His Excellency, quite aghast, do you know to whom you speak? To a nobleman of 78 descents, a count of the Holy Roman Empire, a representative of a sovereign? Ha, egad! Don't stamp, fellow, if you hope for my protection. D'en your protection, said Mr. Billings, in a fury. Urs you and your protection too. I'm a free-born Briton, and no French papist. And any man who insults my mother, or calls me feller had better look to himself, and the two eyes in his head, I can tell him. And with this Mr. Billings put himself into the most approved attitude of the cockpit, and invited his father, the reverend gentleman, and Monsieur Larose the valet, to engage with him in a pugilistic encounter. The two latter, the Abbe especially, seemed dreadfully frightened. But the Count now looked on with much interest, and, giving utterance to a feeble kind of chuckle, which lasted for about half a minute, said, Paws off, Pompey, you young hangdog, you egad, yes, aha, 'pon honor, you're a lad of spirit, some of your father's spunk in you, eh? I know him by that oath. Why, sir, when I was 16, I used to swear, egad, like a Thames waterman, and exactly in this fellow's way. Buss me, my lad. No, kiss my hand. That will do, and he held out a very lean yellow hand, peering from a pair of yellow ruffles. It shook very much, and the shaking made all the rings upon it shine only the more. Well, says Mr. Billings, if he wasn't a-going to abuse me nor mother, I don't care if I shake hands with you. I ain't proud. The Abbe laughed with great glee, and that very evening sent off to his court a most ludicrous spicy description of the whole scene of meeting between this amiable father and child, in which he said that young Billings was the yellow favorite of M. Kitch, Equire, Le Bureau de Londres, and which made the Duke's mistress laugh, so much that she vowed that the Abbe should have a bishopric on his return. For, with such store of wisdom, look you, my son, was the world governed in those days. The Count and his offspring meanwhile conversed with some cordiality. The former informed the latter of all the diseases to which he was subject, his manner of curing them, his great consideration as chamberlain to the Duke of Bavaria, how he wore his court suits, and of a particular powder which he had invented for the hair, how, when he was 17, he had run away with a canoness, egad, who was afterwards locked up in a convent, and grew to be 16 stone in weight, how he remembered the time when ladies did not wear patches, and how the Duchess of Marlborough boxed his ears when he was so high because he wanted to kiss her. All these important anecdotes took some time in the telling, and were accompanied by many profound moral remarks, such as, I can't abide garlic, nor white wine, stab me, nor sauerkraut, though His Highness eats half a bushel per day. I ate it the first time at court, but when they brought it me a second time, I refused, split me and grill me if I didn't. Everybody stared. His Highness looked as fierce as a Turk, and that infernal Krawinkle, my dear, I did for him afterwards, that cursed Krawinkle, I say, looked as pleased as possible, and whispered to Countess Fritsch, Blitzchen, Frau Grafen, apostrophe says he, it's all over with Gelgenstein. Apostrophe, what did I do? I had the entree, and demanded it. Altes, apostrophe says I, falling on one knee, I ate no crowd at dinner today. He remarked it. I saw your highness remark it. Apostrophe, I did, M. Le Comte, apostrophe said his highness, gravely. I had almost tears in my eyes, but it was necessary to come to a resolution, you know. Sir, apostrophe said I speak with deep grief to your highness, who are my benefactor, my friend, my father, but of this I am resolved, I will never eat sauerkraut more. It don't agree with me. After being laid up for 4 weeks by the last dish of sauerkraut of which I partook, I may say with confidence it don't agree with me. By impairing my health, it impairs my intellect, and weakens my strength, and both I would keep for your highness's service. Apostrophe apostrophe, tut, tut. Apostrophe apostrophe said his highness. Tut, tut, tut. Apostrophe those were his very words. Give me my sword or my pen, apostrophe said one. Give me my sword or my pen, and with these Maximilian de Galgenstein, is ready to serve you. But sure, sure, a great prince will pity the weak health of a faithful subject, who does not know how to eat sauerkraut. Apostrophe apostrophe his highness was walking about the room. I was still on my knees, and stretched forward my hand to seize his coat. Jet zum tufel, sir. Apostrophe apostrophe said he, in a loud voice, it means go to the deuce, apostrophe my dear, jet zum tufel, and eat what you like. Apostrophe with this, he went out of the room abruptly, leaving in my hand one of his buttons, which I keep to this day. As soon as I was alone, amazed by his great goodness and bounty, I sobbed aloud, cried like a child. The count's eyes filled and winked at the very recollection, and when I went back into the card room, stepping up to Krawinkle, count, apostrophe says I, who looks foolish now? Apostrophe hey there, La Rose, give me the diamond. Yes, that was the very pun I made, and very good it was thought. Krawinkle, apostrophe says I, who looks foolish now? Apostrophe apostrophe and from that day to this, I was never at a court day asked to eat sauerkraut, never. Hey there, La Rose. Bring me that diamond snuff box in the drawer of my secretaire. And the snuff box was brought. Look at it, my dear, said the count, for I saw you seem to doubt. There is the button, the very one, that came off his grace's coat. Mr. Billings received it, and twisted it about with a stupid air. The story had quite mystified him, for he did not dare, yet to think his father was a fool his respect for the aristocracy prevented him. When the count's communications had ceased, which they did, as soon as the story of the sauerkraut was finished, a silence of some minutes ensued. Mr. Billings was trying to comprehend the circumstances above narrated. His lordship was exhausted. The chaplain had quitted the room directly the word sauerkraut was mentioned. He knew what was coming. His lordship looked for some time at his son, who returned the gaze with his mouth wide open. Well, said the count, L, sir, what are you sitting there for? If you have nothing to say, sir, you had better go. I had you here to amuse me, split me, and not to sit there staring. Mr. Billings rose in a fury. Harkee, my lad, said the count, tell La Rose to give thee 5 guineas, and I'll come again some morning. A nice well-grown young lad, mused the count, as Master Tommy walked wandering out of the apartment. Pretty fellow enough, and intelligent too. Well, he is an odd fellow, my father, thought Mr. Billings, as he walked out, having received the sum offered to him. And he immediately went to call upon his friend Polly Briggs, from whom he had separated in the morning. What was the result of their interview is not at all necessary to the progress of this history. Having made her, however, acquainted with the particulars of his visit to his father, he went to his mother's, and related to her all that had occurred. Poor thing, she was very differently interested in the issue of it. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.